The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
August 2018 is in the books. Employment reports will be key. Canadian trade talks break down. Amazon hits 2,000. And our guest today is Frank Curzio from Curzio Research. All this and much more on episode number 577 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And a happy Labor Day to you. It's Andrew Horowitz. I'm the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast and a principal at Horowitz & Company, where we manage money for folks just like you. We have a great lineup today because we're going to be bringing on Frank Curzio, and we have an action-packed discussion that I'm sure is going to ensue because I have three pages of topics that I wrote out that I want to ask him about. And, you know, Frank is a great friend of the show, so I thought what we'd do is get right into it and hopefully get some of these questions answered, because I have a lot of things related to tariffs that we talked about in the last show about 6 or 7 weeks ago and how those are playing out. I had some questions on what's going on with regard to the numbers that we are seeing in terms of the economics. Is there going to be the potential for recession that all these people are talking about? This is a lot of things that I am looking at in the markets and wondering, what is actually going to be the case when we look forward about 3 to 6 months from now. So let's get right to our guest. And again, have a great Labor Day weekend. I hope you enjoy all the outdoor activities, the end of summer, beginning of September, right? Just started. So here we go. And our special guest today is Frank Curzio from CurzioResearch.com, one of the greatest newsletters out there. Awesome podcast, really great mind in the area of finance. I'm very happy to have him on. It's been 2 months, Frank, since you've been on. I got kind of withdrawal jitters, you know? I'm like, where's Frank? Got to get Frank on, man. So thanks for coming aboard.
I think you're supposed to introduce me as the second best podcast after you.
No, right? You're the best. No, you're the best. I've decided. I've given in. I've thrown the towel. Yours is the best.
It's funny. We've been doing this for a long time, man. Do you think about it? Back in the street.com days when I was doing it, when we first met, I mean, over 10 years for both of us, right? Yeah, I would think.
We're one of the originals. We're one of the OGs.
OGs. That's what we should call ourselves.
We're the OGs, man.
That's great. Love it.
So let me kind of go through a few things. I have a laundry list of things I want to talk to you about. And, you know, you and I, we talk a lot and, you know, I come on your podcast and we talk about things related to either markets or economies. And we've kind of butted heads recently on a couple of items, but I want to kind of go through slowly and then build up to some areas that I think are really interesting. And I guess the first thing is there's some headlines that I've been looking at recently. There's, you know, and I'm not a headline guy, but I mean, you read the guts of the article and you look at the different research and there's some alarm bells that have been sounding recently about the potential for a recession that's like imminent. You know, recession's right around the corner. I'm like, all right, I don't really see that, but okay, I read more. What's the story with this? Why are we seeing this? Is it just a scare tactic? Is there really something that's brewing underneath the surface?
The word recession is scary, but when we define a recession, it's GDP growth, negative GDP growth for two consecutive quarters.
Right.
So if we have negative 0.1% and then we have flat GDP, it's not a recession. But if that happens, stocks are going to get crushed and the market's going to get crushed, right? Especially where GDP is now. So I wouldn't really focus on the word recession, but we realize when markets get really, really hot like they are today, we compare them to 2006, 2007 and say, wow, you know, things are great back then. And then look, we found out like even going into 2008, we were kind of a little nervous with the housing market, but our numbers were still pretty good on the economic front. Weren't horrible yet until you really started getting into like the first quarter, second quarter of 2008. And then when they backtracked, they're like, oh, well, late 2007, early 2008, you know, we really started the recession, right? Which doesn't matter to you then. But my point is, that forget about the recession. And, you know, maybe it's true. I mean, there's so many leading indicators that people look at. The spreads between the 10-year and the 3-month yield is one of the leading indicators that the Fed looks at. And it's pointing as, you know, the trend is that we could hit a recession sometime next year. Again, we were supposed to hit this recession the year before, and then we had tax cuts, which really changed the landscape of everything, right? Because we saw earnings soar for all these companies. They're giving money back. The economy, retail's like Target, saying it's the best environment they've ever seen. But I wouldn't be so concerned with that. I'd just be concerned that we're due for a pullback, whether that comes from an actual recession or not. I mean, no one's going to care if we have two consecutive quarters of negative GDP or one and then one positive and the market comes down 20% either way, right? The market's still going to be down 20%. So instead of focusing on the actual recession word, just know that we're kind of getting inflated levels where I think we just had the greatest, the NASDAQ had the greatest October gains in over like two decades or something, or maybe three. I just read that someplace. Stocks are going through the roof right now in so many areas. Especially
October
technology.
Or August?
This is this month. This month is setting up like the NASDAQ has seen tremendous gains, like one of the best Augusts it had like in decades.
Yep.
So, you know, I would take a little bit off the table. Not a lot, right? We don't want to go against the trend here because the trend is that stocks are going higher and you don't want to be left out because, you know, I made that mistake in 1999 when I was like, wow, this is incredibly overvalued. And people forget that. In 1999 to March, I mean, the NASDAQ doubled. I mean, not only was it up tremendously leading up like 2-3 years before, but usually the last steps before is like this huge, huge move. What we're seeing now, Apple, $1 trillion valuation, Amazon right there, $1 trillion valuation, market cap. So yeah, I would definitely take some money off, try to diversify. I really like international a little bit. That's something you haven't heard from me in a while.
Before we get to international, what you like, let's just talk about this for a second. One of the things that I remember very distinctly many years ago on a podcast, John Markman, who is a great writer, a great mind, has some great newsletters as well, but also he and I at the time were doing some work over at Microsoft's Money Central, and he was writing that, and he actually helped design that whole site. And one of the things he told me stuck in my mind for many years, and that is very simply that stocks reprice valuation in a recession. So you have a stock that could be even at a 20 PE, you know, whatever stock that may be, and has good growth prospects. Once you get to the point of potentially or having a recession, one of the things that happens is that valuations are immediately, well, not one day, but they're repriced much lower because the thought is that, you know, if we do go into recession and the economy slows, well, stocks won't be immune and the growth prospects in the future are much less. And you have to really think about that. If there is a slowdown in the economy, valuations will be challenged. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that, but valuations aren't too crazy right now. I know people don't want to hear that, but I'm a data guy. I'm not a perma bull or perma bear. I have an agenda, right? I just look at the data, and that's how I recommend stocks and my economic outlook to my clients. And over the past 6-7 years, I've been bullish. And then over the past two, I've been saying, you know, I'm still bullish, but cautious, and the tax reforms and stuff like that. When I look at the data right now, you're looking at earnings. They're trading at 16.5 times forward earnings. That's the 5-year average. So if you think stocks are expensive now, that means you thought they were expensive for the last 2-3 years, 4 years, right? Because we're at the 5-year average and the overall average is about 15.5, 15 points. So we're not that far off from the historical average of the PE, you know, and a lot of tax reforms. It's not all tax reforms.
A lot of it's a tax reform, though.
Not all of it.
I said a lot of it.
Yeah, but 10% growth in sales is pretty impressive on the top line that we saw last quarter, right?
Yep.
Now, going forward, I think that's going to be challenged. If you look really detailed at the earnings, which I do, and I know you do as well, most of the strongest companies, the companies that reported the strongest earnings, which was a little weird because the dollar was higher, was companies that have operations overseas. It should have been the other way around.
Not that I think, you know, because of my pull forward effect. Have I talked to you about this?
No, go ahead.
Oh, so my theory, which is only a theory at this point, it can't be fully flushed out for another probably, I would say, quarter, next quarter, or the quarter after that. Now, this goes back to my whole discussion of tariffs. Back in 2014. Back in 2014, there was a tax in Japan put on retail sales that was a significant increase from where they were previously. And it was telegraphed and it was, hey, listen, this is going to happen on this date. There's going to be a big tax increase. And what happened? Right before that, consumers went out and spent everything they had, buying everything possible to get ahead of this incredible tax increase that was going to happen. Right after that, what we saw was reports that came in that we saw incredible retail sales, Things were really good. Consumers were hot. Everybody's like, ah, oh, they don't care about the tax reform, the tax increase. Fast forward a month or two, sales dropped off a cliff. They started to recover a little bit. Then a year later in 2015, the second part of the increased tax plan on retail, and this was because Japan's bonds were in trouble. They were issuing so many bonds and Moody's was going to potentially downgrade them. And they said, listen, you got to have some more revenue coming in here to justify all these bonds that you're putting out there and the, you know, the potential for repayment. So Japan came out with this retail sales tax. The same exact thing happened. Retail investors went out, or retail consumers went out and they bought stuff, not at the same degree they did back a year before. And then right afterwards, it just careened downward. Now, fast forward to where we are today. And exactly what you've talked about is that the companies that rely on most of their international trade, oh, in other words, exporting, let's say, had a really good period. Why? Well, if you think about the pull forward effect, just like what happened in Japan, maybe what is happening is a lot of players said, whoa, before these tariffs go into place, which were telegraphed very widely and very clearly that they were going to potentially go into play at this particular date, we're going to buy everything we have to buy and bulk up our inventories in order to get ahead of any of this excessive increase in cost due to the tariffs. Makes sense so far?
I love it. I love that because I don't have a theory on it, but that does make sense. It doesn't make sense to me how you saw companies that have more exposure overseas report much stronger. They had 30% earnings growth compared to almost lower than 20% earnings growth for companies that just have operations in the U.S. And for me, that's amazing. I think that's incredible. But
don't you think this ties into that a bit? Because now
it could definitely tie into it a bit, right? And we're on the same page here, because I don't think we're going to see those results of those earnings, those strong earnings next quarter, which makes me think we're going to see a lot of companies warn. I mean, the expectation, you look at Facebook, 93% of the analysts, the three companies are going to mention. So it's Facebook, you have Google, and you have Amazon. They all have around, on average, 40, 42 analysts covering their stock. All 90% of the analysts have buy ratings on those companies.
And they always have, and they always will.
Oh, but they not always, because we saw that change when the market does come down. These guys
after the fact.
You know, adapt after the fact, of course. But you know, the expectations are really, really high, and I don't see, and that's a great point. Maybe they all pushed it forward and they decided, hey, you know what, let's purchase all this stuff now because we don't know what's going to happen in the future. And that makes sense. That's a good theory. But we're on the same page where I just think going in, and when I'm listening to these calls, inflation is a major concern, guys, and even with wages. I know wages have lagged, but if you look at, Goldman does a great job. They have a leading indicator wage growth thing, survey that they take. Right. They've been taking it for like 15 years or more. And quarter over quarter, from last quarter to this quarter, you saw wages rise 3.2%. That was the largest quarter over quarter gain since 2007. Mm-hmm. Now, are wages still low? Yes, they are. But when I listen to the conference calls, I'm telling you, 75% of these guys, and man, I get reports of all like the highlights of these calls. I mean, that's what we do, Andrew and I, when we listen to earnings. They all cite a high labor cost, high commodity cost, high. So they have higher costs going in. You have geopolitical risk, and you have expectations sky high. Next quarter really sets up for these guys to miss, and I think they're even going to warn going into the end of the year, which is why I'm saying take a little bit off the table. We could both be wrong, but for me, that's why I'm a little cautious right now, because I don't think that we can sustain this type of earning growth, especially with all these risks in the marketplace, going into next quarter and the quarter after. So it's going to be interesting for the rest of the year.
So let me just throw a little bit more into this. A lot of my listeners have followed me on this and understand this, but I'm going to just throw it out there again to you since you said you didn't hear my theories fully. Now, to totally take you through this theory, what happens now is that we still have some rolling tariffs that are being put in place, questions about whether we're going to have the continuing tariffs on Mexico, if that's going to be lifted. Some were lifted, some weren't, whether or not the $200 billion is going to be put in place. So we still have a little bit of time for the full boat to be, you know, installed here, if you will, right? But one of the things that was a very interesting tell about how this could play out is the last GDP number that we saw. When you look at the components of GDP, you see that exports blossomed by 200% compared to the previous quarter. And the biggest part of GDP that really pushed it above that level to get into the 4% range was not only exports, but also personal consumption. Those two things outpaced anything else in a big way. In other words, the exports, if you utilize and go back to my theory, were also pulled forward because people wanted to be out of the way of any tariffs. We saw ships that were racing to China to get there before the tariffs were implemented by hours, so they wouldn't have to pay any extra. So now that we have these implemented, both sets of the Chinese tariffs, we've implemented back and forth with Europe and Canada and Mexico and around the world, et cetera. Forget about the sanctions on Turkey and all that, but the general tariffs. It does seem possible that if we see, now this is how we actually find out if I'm right. If we see that next quarter is questionable because we still had some rolling tariffs put in the recent days. But if the quarter after that in particular, next quarter, but definitely the quarter after that. So that would be the final quarter of the year, I guess, right? We see that there was a significant slowdown, then this is going to play out exactly as I'm talking about. And we may see a drop off to a negative GDP into next year. So that's my 2 cents.
No. I love that theory. I agree with you. We're definitely going to slow from here. We're not going to, and expectations are that we're going to continue to keep growing. And I don't see that. You're going to see estimates come down, which a lot of the average Joes and mom and pop members aren't going to see, right? Because when I say estimates, I'm looking at what all that matters to you guys is really the analyst estimates, right? It doesn't matter if the company says we're going to earn $10 billion next year. If the analysts say they're only going to earn $2 billion, that's the number that you focus on. When you see CNBC and you see earnings beat estimates, those are the estimates from the analysts. And what we see as mom and pop investors, you'll see them upgrades, downgrades, big price targets. Morgan Stanley raises target price to $2,500. That's what you see. What you never see is these guys revise their earnings going in. And that's what happened to Apple last quarter. And every single one of these analysts lowered their estimates significantly for Apple going in. And Apple beat. And all you see is Apple beat and the stock goes up. And even though their revenue is growing less than half of the average S&P 500 company, they're seeing earnings grow tremendously because they have an amazing balance sheet, the biggest in the world. It's an amazing company. It's great. And they're buying back a hell of a lot of their stock, which is why their earnings are inflated right now. It's not because they're seeing a boom in business. And forget about services. It's still a very, very small part of the $250 billion of revenues that they generate. They're an iPhone company. And they're going to force three, four iPhones down your throat. But that's what we're seeing
right now. And we keep on taking it. Just for just for the purposes of us having this down and making it a concrete point. This is now forevermore called the Horowitz PFE theory, the pull forward effect theory. Okay, got that? The Horowitz PFE theory.
Got it.
So I'm going to live or
I
die.
I just wrote it down.
Yeah.
You know what? If it doesn't work, I'm not going to mention it to everybody. If it works, I'll mention it to everybody.
Yeah, how's that sound? Thank you so much. Now, there's one other economic chart that also causes a little bit of pause, and I sent that over to you. That's the Citibank Economic Surprise Index. Did you track that? Did you take a look at that? It's very interesting how...
I don't track that, but it was interesting. Yeah, go ahead.
So I wrote a whole piece on this maybe about 6 months ago. So what happens is that worse than analysts that adjust their numbers on a regular basis to coordinate with what's actually happening with the stock. So somebody comes out with $1,000 price target year end for a stock, and now the stock is at $1,000 and it's the first day of the year. They'll usually revise it up. Not because anything changed, because they need to be more realistic with where their price target is. Analysts, economic analysts, are even worse. They will give you numbers and really try to stay with consensus. Wherever the consensus is, that's where they're going to be. They don't want to be too far outside of that because they become, the outside guy that doesn't know what they're talking about, taking too much risk, and you know how that goes. But one of the things you have is the Citibank Economic Surprise Index. What it does is it tracks the actual economic report, the report that comes out, to what analysts have said. And what you find all the time is that analysts are usually behind the curve. So when things are going really well, what they do is they start ratcheting up their numbers, and the numbers come out better. So you get the economic surprise index moving higher, and that's really good. What happens from there, though, is that you get all of a sudden too much analyst excitement about it, and they keep on raising their numbers till all of a sudden it starts turning the other side, and they start lowering it slightly and lowering it. But then all of a sudden that economic surprise index starts rolling down. Whereas where we thought something was going to be from an analyst standpoint, an economic analyst, now all of a sudden it's a lot lower and they got to start catching up. So you see this constant, lagging of the data. But when I see that the economic surprise index drops significantly, the lowest it's been in a while, a very long time, means that analysts are way too optimistic about where the economy is right now, and we're seeing a lot of disappointment. That's another part of my concern right now about where we are, which totally goes against consumer confidence, which was at an 18-year high just this week.
Yeah, which is, guys, just because it's at an 18-year high, that's seen as a negative indicator, right? So I could tell you this. When it comes to the economy, you brought up a good point, and I see this with economists all the time because they're so wrong. But when you look at those guys, they're number-oriented, right? They have no friends. And I have a lot of economists. I'm not saying it in a bad way. Their friends are like higher ups.
Right, you're not friends with analysts, but you know analysts.
No, I know a lot of that. I know a lot of economists, right. Not analysts, but okay. Economists, right. Who are great people, but they're not people that you're going to go out and have a beer with and have fun and hang out, right? They all know these, the very conservative people. They lock themselves in a room and look at bell curves and stuff like that. And that's amazing. They do a great job. I'm not picking on them. But you have to realize that everybody listen to this. When you hear economics, you think of bell curves, you think of all kinds of charts and supply demand. You are better economist than anybody out there. All you have to do is look around. I mean, look how much you're paying for milk or when you go to tuition, right? For your kids, supermarket price, gas prices, electricity prices. Are there a lot of homes for sale in your neighborhood? In my neighborhood, there's nothing for sale. Everything goes up. It's gone. There's no inventory. Are the malls crowded? What are your kids buying? Are they on Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, whatever? You look at your neighbors where they don't have high paying jobs or whatever. And they just bought they have two Mercedes in the driveway. You could look around you and actually get a great feeling for the economy. All you have to do is look. And that's real time data compared to all this stuff that we look at where economists are just looking at numbers and basing on history. And everyone says, well, history, usually repeats itself. Not all the time. I mean,
well, not in the same way. It does repeat itself, but not in the same way. It's a different story.
When margins are supposed to revert back to the mean, I've heard that for the last 5 years as a reason why you should sell stocks. And that's been true. But when you see the productivity gains, and listen, you have been in this industry just as long as I've been. I mean, I've been in it for longer than 20 years. I actually grew up. My late dad was a newsletter writer for 30 years. I mean, he had to go to the library to get reports. We had to get 10Ks mailed to us.
I went on the weekends to the library, yeah.
And now the amount, the productivity, the things that I do now, I could find every single supplier, every publicly traded stock that supplies Walmart inside of a minute through my systems.
Right.
Through your systems, you could do it too. But think about, imagine trying to find that out. But the productivity that we've seen, so you just have to be careful. But when it comes to the economy, guys, you know better than everybody. You're the one that's paying these bills. It's just like everybody else. And you're talking to your friends. Keep an eye on that. When you see that change, when you see houses aren't suddenly selling anymore, you're going to see it before everything's reported. And all these economists are going to say, because they're going to look at the numbers that are lagging. I'm not going to be talking to the average people. So that's important. And telling you, it can lead to great stock picks. It can lead to how your portfolio is set up. And all you have to do is look around a little bit.
Let's talk about real-time investors. Are investors a little too complacent at this point with some of the risk? I mean, we could spend probably the next 20 minutes if we went back and forth in a game. And I would say, okay, Frank, let's just reel off one at a time, back and forth, the risks that are out there. And we would say, geopolitical risks. And we have the oil risk and we have the Iran risk and we have the Italian bank risk that's going on. We have the debt
risk.
Yeah, I mean, we could go back.
$1.4 trillion home loans, a subprime, all this stuff that we know about that we talk
plastic
about.
Plastic straws.
Well, I could tell you, it's funny how we know all about plastic straws, no Starbucks, but we can highlight all the risks. You know why? Because everybody mentions them to us all the time. And why is that? Because fear sells, right? That's what we have 24-hour news service where after earnings in our business, you really don't need 24-hour news service. So you have to inflate every story. And that's one of the things, I mean, we can get into tariffs and things like that too. But, when I see these stories being inflated, we don't hear about the positives. And when we talk about the positives is stocks aren't crazy expensive, but that's based on current earnings. And I just told you earnings could come down, so don't be worried. There's over $6 trillion in equity in homes right now that people haven't tapped. They're probably not allowed to tap because, the laws and Dodd-Frank and banks are much more stringent than they ever were. They're not allowing people to buy 2-3 homes with nothing down anymore.
Or even if you have good credit and all that, it makes it a little bit difficult.
It does make it difficult. It's very difficult. And you could tell people to email you. They'll tell you stories. I mean, this is from what we hear from you guys. We have a great network and our research. Another positive is when I look at the private equity companies, when KKR, what do they have? They have, I think it's something like $130, $140 billion now. And they have, I want to say, don't quote me on this, about 2 months ago, I think I looked, but it was something like $35 billion in fresh powder, right? So the private equity firms invest in things. And when they sell it, they have all this cash and they can't, they're not going to make fees off of it unless they're investing it. But there's private equity and there's money on the sidelines right now waiting to come in for the market to pull back 10 to 15%, which could provide a bottom. Another positive, which nobody wants to hear. It's the worst thing ever, and I don't agree with it. But what happened the last time the markets crashed and we almost saw Armageddon? The Fed came out, backstopped every single thing. And the worst thing that happened is they made a fortune on it, right? Mm-hmm. A Fannie, Freddie, all mm-hmm. the banks, all the preferred stock. So if you're in the Armageddon camp and say, wow, the market's going to get crushed this time, it's going to get destroyed. If we go down 30% and home prices decline 15, 20%, what do you think the Fed's going to do?
So are you saying that complacency is misplaced in that, well, let me say it this way.
I'm playing devil's advocate here. Right. I'm not okay, supporting. What I'm saying is just this is how you should look at the stocks and the economy, where don't have an agenda. Don't be a permeable. Don't be mm-hmm. a permeable. Look mm-hmm. at all the data, because you'll find there's still value. There's a lot of value in this market today, even though stocks are high. You've seen, you know, biotech stocks. I'm seeing a ton of value and some small caps that haven't surged. I mean, you know, in this market where algorithms play such a big part,
yep.
when companies miss earnings, they fall 20, 30% in a day and, you know, they'll pop out 15, 20%. It provides a good buying opportunity. So,
let's kind of go to that. Let's talk about the value side of things. You started to mention, when I cut you off earlier, the discussion about emerging markets. Now, there's a lot going on there. So we have the recent drop of the Turkish lira that just got blasted in a week. It was down like 50% at the low point for the week. For a currency, that's significant. Let's not even talk about Venezuela here. Let's talk about Argentina, though. We're seeing that the Argentinian currency is dropping off a cliff. The Indian rupee is at, like, I don't know, an all-time low from recording period against the dollar. So is there a concern or is there value there?
There's value there. And here's when we had our disagreements with tariffs, where I was telling investors that it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. Don't focus on it. And you provided some stocks and you were dead right, like Whirlpool and Harley Davidson, where it's going to impact a few companies out there. But I didn't say it I just said it's an inflated story, and eventually China and Europe will have – you know, they'll have to comply. Europe did kind of, Europe blinked. But the reason why is because I do the math on a lot of this stuff. And when I see, just looking at autos, right, and you look at the average profit for an auto really quick is about $4,000. If you look at steel tariffs, $150 is going to be taken off of that, which is a little significant. I get it. But when you factor in the tax reforms, the auto companies are generating an extra $550 on that. So you're looking at you know, a pretty good amount of $300 net that these auto companies are still generating even with tariffs. So we could afford for this to go longer, and we're asking China to you know, hey, listen, just make it a little fairer, because it's a joke right now. And what I didn't expect is China to keep fighting, and they're fighting, and their market's down how much? And even Trump, whether they like him or not, it's not political, but he even said, he's like, why even do a trade deal? Why just let them sweat? He's like, look what's happened to their economy. The point is that China is going to have to come out and say, okay, they're not going to do it publicly, but they're doing it right now behind the scenes because their market's getting destroyed. And they're going to say, okay, what do we need to do to solve this problem that everybody's happy? Then you throw in the stimulus that they're announcing right now, and you throw in the fact that a lot of these stocks are down 20, 25%. There's a lot of catalysts ahead for China. China can't keep going this way, so much so that today we've seen, really last week, Asian nations outside of China said, no, we want to comply with the U.S. We need the U.S., you know, because, you know, we're the largest consumer. That's what's going to happen with China, and I think that's a great opportunity for China, and also in European places too, maybe European banks, which sounds crazy because we saw what happened to Italy. But if you look at I don't want to get too technical here, guys, but credit default swaps, basically, you know, insurance contracts of you know, the bank system blowing up or whatever security blowing up, it's like insurance against that. If you look at them, they're still lower despite what's going on in Europe. And this is credit default swaps monitored for the 30th largest banks in Europe. It's still much lower than 2011-12 during the credit crisis. So there's concerns that there could be a massive credit crisis there, but you know what? The smart money is not betting on that. And it tells you that it's inflated, which for me, it seems like not a lot, but if you have Amazon, which we've had, and have 100% gains on that stock and 100% gains on a lot of our stocks, take a little bit off and maybe throw it into some international stuff. I just think there's value there, and it's going to protect you. And I just think it's a smart thing to do.
We actually just increased our emerging markets exposure just about 3 weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago. And nothing major, just bumped it up a little bit because I've been resisting for some time. We've been underweight in that area for about a year and a half or so. And I was really concerned with the fact that there was some kind of problems, the dollar rising. There was just a bunch of little things that were coming together that I said, you know what? I don't want to really push a lot of money into that area. Let's stay a little under, you know, under invested in that area. So we pushed it back up across the board for most of our clients. Actually, it's done well so far. But my big concern right now, you talk about European. The problem is I have a real concern. You say Italy banks, I get it. And I know you have Mario Draghi with hopefully coming in with
no,
some
kind not of Italy banks, but it's just like the 30 largest banks in Europe. Right, I mean, but, Italy, yeah.
Italy's okay, got some problems though. But the thing is that they always have problems. And they, by the way, they will always have problems. But this Turkish lira issue, my concern is how much is on the books of the bonds. Once we have the Turkish lira dropping, let's say 30%, it makes it very difficult for either company, whoever issued dollar denominated bonds, which most of these are issued in, to repay those bonds. Right now they're being marked at 20 cents. I just had some conversations with a variety of companies that hold Turkish bonds. And it was a 7% component of the emerging market bond benchmark basket. Now it's a 2%. And that's not because it's dropped down due to anything other than the fact that prices have dropped. They're trading at 20 cents. And most of these players are just going to hold on. And I said, well, what are you holding on for? I said, is it all about, you know, hopefully they're going to come back, you know, that maybe something's going to be good, because the probability of them paying back these bonds is pretty remote right now. You know, with
Andrew, you also have to factor in too, what did Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan do during the credit crisis? They started happening well ahead of time, right? Just like the people who, whether it's Citibank, whether it has a large exposure to emerging markets or JP Morgan or whoever, they're able to see these, right? Because they're talking to the actual people, they're talking to the political parties behind this. They actually see this coming. So what did Goldman and JP Morgan do? They hedged all their risk. They just did it through AIG, and AIG had no clue and took on all that risk.
Yep.
And if AIG blew up, then there was nothing. So we see the exposure, but for me as a bank that you know, your job is really to have, you know, risk reward measures in place and lower your risk as much as possible. I would find it hard to believe that they didn't protect themselves from this or take the other side of trades just to hedge some of that position off, just like insurance companies do when they offer, you know, for reinsurance companies. Reinsurance are insurance for insurance companies. So yeah, 7% is big, but I'd be surprised if these banks, which, you know, we've seen Turkey coming for a while, haven't lowered their risk or hedged themselves some way, just like oil companies do when they hedge oil prices, right?
So, some of them may, but the problem is that a lot of them these days, you know, the whole idea of sticking with a benchmark mark, not going too outside, being more passive than active. I will tell you, I talked to several different major institutions. They did not change any of their Turkish bond, nor did they hedge out. And they just took it down. And that's why you see a lot of these emerging market bond funds get hurt. The ones that don't hedge.
I mean, yeah, that's a good point. And me, I'm speculating. So I don't know for a fact, but for me, you know, I think it's a good speculation. But like you said, you know, you'll see that impact come up. And if it does, and you'll see it in the bank statements next quarter, at least you should, but it's definitely something to monitor.
Yep. So you were saying just really quickly about the tariffs, about how you don't think it was going to be too much of a worry, which, by the way, you were right about, that the markets are not worried. There's worry, but the markets in general are not worried. Well, the markets in general are not worried about anything. Let's get that straight, okay? I mean, they're not worried.
I just thought this was being inflated. I really thought this was being – listen, if you guys really want to know, if you want to know, and I'll change my opinion on this, and I don't know if you want to know about it, but forget about me for a second. But if you really want to know if this is for real, there's one way China could really screw the U.S., and that's by raising the price of rare earth metals. Rare earth metals, which are not rare, but they supply probably 80-90%, depending on what study you listen to, is between 75 to 90%. But massive control over this industry. And this is used for our weapons. This is used for technology parts.
It's power batteries.
Yep. And until I see China raise tariffs or either, you know, we're not shipping this to the U.S., that's when you know this is for real. But for now, when you hear, oh, wow, $30 billion or $100 billion, it's very little, believe it or not, in the scheme of things. And it's just these guys, that's a negotiation tactic where it's the public, what we're supposed to know, and write all these stories and scare the hell out of people. But underneath, this has to, for China especially, they're going to have to blink. There's going to be things that are done. And for me, when I look at the markets, I didn't say it's not a concern. You know, I said it don't be concerned as an investor, but buy stocks on any pullback for tariffs and ignore these stories. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you could use them as trading opportunities because it does influence the market, where we've seen big moves back and forth with old trade deals and even NAFTA and stuff like that with Canada and Mexico. But for me, it's just the profits and the surge in profits. I just, you know, we're in bull market and it's full stealth mode. And I knew this wasn't really going to make a dent in more than 90% of the companies.
So with that, just to make another point, if you do want to find out more about Frank's calls and his opinions and because he is opinionated in a good way when it comes to markets and all that. You can go over to CurzioResearch.com. He's got plenty of different newsletters. You can listen to his podcast. You can check out all the things that are available. I encourage you to check it out. I read his newsletter quite often. He has a few different varieties and flavors depending on how you want to, you know, what kind of newsletters you want to look at, but some great writings and all that. By the way, did you, I know we had talked about it like about a month ago. Did you check out that new Investology site we put up?
Yes, and very impressive. And I mean, it sounds like we're marketing this here, but we're not. But yeah, because we always share like our new things with each other. And, you know, Andrew and I really respect our opinions. So, you know, each other's opinions, because we don't tell each other what we want to hear because we're friends, right? Yeah. When we're like, something's bad. What, you know, I'll let you know. It's like, I'm not crazy about it. And you'll do the same. And this is something that I think was really, really cool that I thought was awesome. So, and it's cool. I'm surprised the feedback and stuff, I'm sure that you get it is positive, yeah. But I loved it. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah. What's nice about, just a quickie, what's really nice and what we're hearing from people is what you think that people are going to really like and what they actually do like, right? And kind of what we thought. But one of the things they really like is the whole process of discovering their risk and their time horizon and the matching of that with the portfolios that we put together and how easy the process is from doing that to just investing and doing it. And just the whole, and we thought, they're really gonna like the whole back end, you know, where they can see all the reporting and all the stuff. And it's going to be, you know, but they like the whole front end process. It's really kind of cool where you just go through the whole thing. And we're like, okay, that's great. We're glad that worked out. Not that they don't like the back end, but that we're seeing a lot of the feedback. That's how, I guess, how smooth the whole process is and how they've really matched it really well with their
rebalancing is the biggest key too, which you have in there. Cause people and just, you know, rebalancing your portfolios. For example, now I'm getting tons of questions about marijuana and I'm trying to teach my investors that, you know, someone asked me a question on my Frankly Speaking podcast, which I host every Wednesday. It's different from Wall Street Unplugged, which is Wednesday that I interview, but Frankly Speaks on Friday, where I just take questions from people and answer them. And they asked me about marijuana stocks back in May. And I said, Canopy Growth is a great place, sticks to the main players. And they're up 60, 70%. And some guy emails me recently and says, should I get into marijuana stocks? And that's what I'm trying to help people avoid, where you want to get, there's no better feeling when you're buying something that's up 30, 60, 100%. And then you see all of Wall Street and everybody else start getting in and you're like, hey, you want it? Here you go. I'll sell it to you. It's the best feeling in the world, but you want to be able to rebalance.
So you're selling marijuana now? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I become a marijuana deal.
So let's talk about pot stocks.
The point is rebalancing. Rebalancing is very important. Right. And just, you know, now's not the time to own marijuana, but it was like, you know, 6 months ago. So, you know, now I think biotech is great and you're rebalancing those portfolios. Now, really quick before I get to the point, I mean, and I'm not bringing this up because, you know, I've recommended GE for your podcast, for your listeners. But also in last October, I talked about retailers and how it was a great buy when everyone said all the department stores were done. They're going out of business. And now it's just so funny for me to see on TV where everyone's like, retail's back. You got to buy these department stores. It kind of makes me laugh. But now people are getting into retail when a lot of these stocks are up 75, 80, 90%.
And we're shorting them. We're shorting them.
Yeah. So, you should be shorting them. So the rebalancing is cool. Yeah. Yep.
All right. But let's talk about pot stocks, because actually recently we added an ETF to one of our portfolios, the MJ Marijuana ETF. And it has a broad base. So, you know, so you don't have to necessarily pick one stock versus the other, because it could be a little difficult. But is this like the new Bitcoin? I'm starting to get a feeling that out there, the talk is very similar to the talk about cryptocurrencies, right? You know, the whole...
Not even close.
Well, nothing could be close to what it was. But I'm saying it's a definite wave of things, don't you think? It's a pretty hot area.
I mean, look, there's going to be fraud in the marijuana industry. It's going to be inflated expectations. But when you see Canopy Growth and a couple like Constellation Brands invest again, right? Another couple billion dollars investment in it. You know it's for real. These guys do have operations. They do report. You have GW Pharmaceuticals, which is the biotech that uses... That's fantastic. So there's a lot of great companies in there. And even the garbage ones, at least you're getting equity. And when you're looking at the ICOs, which people don't realize in cryptocurrencies, they're not tied to anything. They're not tied to anything. People don't know that. So for example, if their company, if you have something that tracks, you know, whatever, fish this way, you know, China and the fish problem, things like that, where you could track it and know exactly what lake it came out of, what time, and, you know, so it proves the accuracy. That's pretty cool. Now, you know, it's something that we need that to improve. This way we know exactly what we're eating and things like that and where our food came from. That's fantastic.
That's blockchain.
But this is the thing. They're using blockchain technologies, right? This, and you bring up a great point, because blockchain and your token – are two different things, like Bitcoin. So they use blockchain technology. And say if Microsoft or the Fortune 500 companies all come in and say, we're going to give you $1 billion each. So they generate $500 billion in a quarter. As a token holder, you get nothing. It's not, you don't have an equity stake. There's no asset back behind it. It's for the token's value is just like if you go to Dave and Buster's and they have points on your system, you're going to use whatever, 25 points is a quarter. And Dave and Buster's may say, hey, you know what? On Wednesday, that's worth 50 cents. So you could probably sell those tokens for 30 cents to people who go to Dave and Buster's. That's what the token is. It's a token that you have to use on the website, but you could generate billions in profits and the token go to zero.
Yeah.
And the company's still in business. So it's not like you have an equity stake in the company, like, you know, in these marijuana companies where if their business does great, you're going to do great. If it doesn't, you're going to go down. Your business could actually do fantastic. The token's not tied to anything. And people really don't know that. That's why when this SEC comes out and regulates and says everything's a security, you're going to see about 95% of this business go under, which, by the way, shouldn't scare you because the 5% really accounts probably for 85% of the market cap of the entire industry. But that regulation is going to make this industry much, much better because there's a lot of great things with blockchain and just there's a lot of crooks out there, much more compared to marijuana. Trust me.
But let's talk about the marijuana again. So it seems like there's still a bit of a craze or at least a real good desire to be in these stocks. I mean, we saw, you know, last week Cronos get whacked after Citron came out. It was down like, I don't know, 30% or something like that, popping back up a couple of days later. You know, and we see, like you said, a lot of companies coming in looking at, oh, forget beer, forget calories. We're just going to have THC infused, I don't know, carbonated beverage of some sort or some beverage of some sort, which is kind of interesting. I mean, you know, that whole idea, the medical marijuana, which we have down here in Florida. And, you know, that's kind of taking off pretty well. And of course, the potential for not only Canada, but other countries approving the use of recreational marijuana. So you're saying that it's not a good time to invest in this, or is it not a good time to really soak it all in there, but possibly keep that as a sector?
Just invest in it right now. I think, you know, I mean, they've gone up, some of these stocks have gone up 100% in 3 weeks. I mean, if you want to buy them, good luck. But, you know, I think it would be better to buy them when we were kind of like pitching these things or talking about them in my podcast. But when you see things go up 100%, really just on not too, on another large, on what the largest player getting an investment from, you know, a Fortune 500 company, what does that have to do with these smaller companies? Because it doesn't mean that they're going to get the investment, right? It's kind of like biotech going higher because Celgene got a great investment.
But
right?
what it does is, I mean, we're not talking about a little bit of money. We're talking about $4 billion here with Constellation mm-hmm. Brands. And so what it does is it lends some account.
There is accountability.
And credibility.
There is credibility. I mean, this is something I've been following since 2014. I mean, when you look at a pain application, even the leading doctors in the world have reversed decisions on this and said that, you know, we made a mistake on this. This data was inaccurate. Now we know that this is much better than anything else out there. I think it's a million times better for more people to smoke pot personally or just, you know, recreationally than drink beer. And I forgot what it was, ABC, and there was a girl that really gets marijuana, one of the anchors, and she went to Colorado and tailgating, and everybody was smoking because it's legal. They were all smoking pot and marijuana. And she came out and said, like, everyone was so happy and everyone's so nice. You don't have the arrogance of people drinking and throwing bottles and going crazy. So, but you know, the health benefits are there. You don't see the side effects that even for people who are smoking, again, the studies are still early, but you know, I don't know anyone who really died smoking marijuana. I don't know anyone who's angry when they're on marijuana, but yeah, I just think it's a personal preference. If people want to do it, do it. If not, you don't have to. But for now, when we're looking at a bigger point of view, you're seeing these states that approve that the revenue, the tax revenue coming in is enormous. It's going to force the other states, which we just saw with gambling, right? States are allowed to legalize gambling individually. So once we change this law on the federal level, which is very important because you could actually go into Colorado and arrest people for selling pot on a federal level. And it's a reason why a lot of banks don't accept payments still. But once it gets accepted on a federal level, I think you see a lot more states follow suit. But, you know,
well, especially when people can pay with legitimate credit cards versus cash. I mean, now you can only pay by cash.
I mean, it's here. The trend is here. You can't doubt it, whether you agree with it or not. I mean, the trend is here. And I didn't need Constellation Brands to invest $4 billion to tell me, wow, this is real. I knew this was real when we saw Colorado pass it, what, 2-3 years ago. You know, and a lot of states follow. And now we have, you know, Nevada and you know, I think it's 7 or 8 states now that approve for recreational use. And it's like 32 states that are approved for medicinal uses. But, you know, it's here. I mean, this trend is here and it's validated to me. It's just a matter of picking the right stocks, the right management teams that are going to do good. And there's a lot of crappy stocks in there. But there's a couple of them that are fantastic. And Canopy's one of them.
Yep. Let's quickly shift over to a topic that is troubling. What is going on with gold? I mean, it seems like there's no buying interest in the face of any kind of political instability or worries around the world. And are countries around the world, maybe the central banks, maybe the treasuries, unloading, like, for example, from Venezuela, Argentina, maybe even some of the countries that are in trouble, like Turkey, are they maybe unloading their gold holdings or something? What's going on with gold? It just cannot get a break.
I have spoken at gold conferences, leading gold conferences, been keynote speakers at these things pretty much for the past 5 years and followed the industry for 10 years. I've listened to people who've been in this industry for 30, 40 years tell me what moves gold higher, and none of that exists. I don't care. You had higher rates. You have rates going higher now. You have inflation kicking into the market. We had zero inflation, lower rates, higher dollar, lower dollar. We had, you know, Brexit and safe haven. I mean, I don't know what's going to drive gold higher other than maybe the fundamentals, because there haven't been major discoveries out there over the past 4 years because there's just no CapEx spending. But I will tell you this. It's a sector that I would take 1%, maybe 2% of your holding and buy some of the quality, right? The quality in junior miners don't make sense, but just quality, where when I say quality, guys who had that have, you know, 20 years experience in the industry, bringing mines to actual production, guys that have high grade gold projects, guys that don't need to raise money. It's not too difficult to find this stuff out. Just buy a handful of those. Maybe four or five of them. I mean, that's some of the ones that we cover, and we've stopped out on a couple of these in the past, but when this cycle turns, and it turned a little bit in 2016, and we were right on it, where we saw literally 900% gains in 7 months for Northern Dynasty, 500% gains in McEwen Mining, Yamana Gold. You could, when these things turn, the cycle turns, these stocks don't go up 100, 200%. They go up 5 times to 10 times. And right now, with how depressed it is, the risk reward is worth it. Just understand when you go in there, and if it's for $500, $1,000, or $5,000, just go in there and say, you know what? I'm going to lose the 5,000 because that 5,000 could really turn into 50,000 within a year or two if the cycle turns. And right now we're seeing one of the longest down cycles outside of a blip in 2016, like 6 months, that these guys and the experts that I talked to, Rick Rules, Eric Sprotts, Marin Katusis and stuff like that, and Doug Casey's, that they've seen in 40 years. So it's so depressed right now and everyone's looking to get out, that the prices they're trading at, the risk reward, you just need these things to go from less bad to bad and you're going to get triple digit winners. Yep. So I think from a risk reward standpoint, especially if you're up a lot in the stock market right now, take a tiny bit off and diversify into this. And that's what I was saying, diversify a little bit internationally. But for juniors, just make sure it's money you could lose, because the reward is definitely worth that risk you're going to take.
Yeah. All right. In closing, any other comments, thoughts, ideas, questions?
Oh, and questions. I like to give ideas. I know people like to give ideas. One of the stocks that I like, I think over the next 6 months, you can quote me, and I've been wrong before, but I kind of like Intel here.
Huh.
Right? With I know.
All, Intel, well, they have a lot everything. Of problems. They have exactly. Security problems. They have also, you're saying yep. that this is like overly
10
done.
Nanometer. Well, the thing is, every one of their problems now, it's almost like when you saw Tesla. And I don't want to get into Tesla conversation because everyone
gets emotional
about it.
I'm so sick of it.
But I'm just saying, one of the things I really like going into the quarter with Tesla is Elon Musk knew every single risk going in. He knew every risk, right? He even knew he had to apologize to the analyst. He said, okay, we're not going to need to raise money. We're going to raise production,
so
all this
funny.
Stuff.
That was so funny.
And his stock took off. Intel knows all their risks, which are on the table. We all know them. The delay in 10 nanometer. They're going to see slowdown in margins. They see all of this, and all the analysts have significantly lowered their estimates. So they only expect 1%, 2% earnings growth year over year from 2008 to 2019. The expectations are so low right now that even if they report inline earnings, I think you can see a nice pop in that stock and it still pays a nice dividend. But the fact that all the risks are not only priced in, because we saw risk with Facebook, but the analysts still have buy ratings and actually raise their target price, which is amazing. Everybody lowered their target prices. Everybody lowered their estimates, and expectations are going to be pretty easy to beat for a company that kind of knows the risks ahead for them. I think they're going to be prepared, and I think it's a good play over the next 6 months.
All right. Good stuff. Frank Curzio, you can find him over on CurzioResearch.com and check out all the things that he has, including his podcast, his newsletters, and a lot of good stuff. You get some great insight, hopefully a couple of great investment picks as well. Always great to have you, my friend. Thanks.
Hey, don't forget, I want to go on your boat pretty soon.
Come on down. Come on.
You got it, buddy.
All right, see ya. Thanks.
Take care.
Bye. Always fun having Frank on. Always a good time with Mr. Curzio. Next week, we're going to be looking at some of the important things. For example, we have the economic report at the end of the week that relates to employment. So that's probably going to be in focus for a lot of people. And we have this holiday shortened week for markets, and that's probably going to be something that plays into things. We saw that there was a significant lack of volume at the end of the month in August, which is expected. It's summertime. People are letting things lie, see how things play out, not reacting too significantly. But let's keep a watch on what's going to happen next week. Until then, I wish you a great Labor Day, a great weekend, and a great start to the week. I'll see you soon. Thanks a lot.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.